FM. It's Unique Real Estate on Sioux Falls Radio, the only show of its kind in the area. This is It's Your Business. Now here's your conductor, the maestro, and your host for the show, Bill Zortman.
Good morning. It's Your Business. I'm Bill Zortman, and welcome to show number 599. 599 in our original It's Your Business series. Tomorrow, we celebrate 600. I got an advance symbol on 600. Today, the topic, addiction and recovery. And the show is a follow-up to a previous show, Nursing and Addiction. On that show, a young lady, Carrie, who is now a chief cook at Tallgrass, explained her chapter as a licensed nurse between 2007 and 2010. She made the rounds at a hospital taking care of patients, but as she did, she said she was hiding a darker side. Morphine and Vicodin was something that just wanted to get into her hands, she explained. She admitted to being addicted to prescription drugs, and instead of throwing them away, was taking them from the hospital to feed her habit. Carrie called it a big absolute lie, and it took that crash, showing up to work impaired and losing her job, before she had the change that she said she needed. She voluntarily surrendered her nursing license after being invested by the South Dakota Board of Nursing. There were pre-filled syringes, and being short-staffed and overwhelmed, she had to decide between putting them in a waste container, taking them home. When she was finally caught, she said she was relieved. And as far as she knows, Carrie says she never injured or harmed a patient. Joining us today as part of our three-person panel is Gloria Damgaard, Executive Director of the South Dakota Board of Nursing. Gloria, good morning.
Thank you. Good morning to you.
The story we are talking about relayed on our show is real. It's a little scary and leads into the discussion today. Dennis Ford, Tallgrass, Executive Director, is here. Somebody decided to take a trip already to Cancun, and we hope Joan enjoys her time away, but I'll bet you can fill in.
Thank you very much for having me, Bill. It's a pleasure to be here.
Julie Schoolmeester, Face It Together Sioux Falls, is here as well. Julie, it's nice to have you a part of the show, and I know that you and Dennis are going to be jumping in here shortly.
Yep. Thanks, Bill.
All right, Julie, the numbers we're going to talk about are a bit scary, but when you consider that more than 10% of those in Sioux Falls and the area have addictions that they admit to, and the percentage of nurses that are found with lifting medications then believed suspended is about 1% in Sioux Falls, roughly 18,000 across the state. Do you find that concerning?
Well, definitely. You know, I think when you look at the numbers and you say, okay, if 10% of the general public does suffer from the disease of addiction, why would that number be different amongst nurses? That number is pretty consistent. You know, doesn't matter what your socioeconomic background is, what your employment is, you know, and actually in some fields of employment, that number is actually higher than 10%, like broadcasting. I know that's higher, closer to 20%. So it's a scary number because we trust our health professionals with our lives and with our health and well-being. So it's definitely something that we need to address, and I'm excited that Gloria is here this morning since the Board of Nursing is the agent in place to help protect the public.
Dennis, when we talk about this morning, you as Executive Director at Tallgrass, we talked again a little bit before the show. Is this something you see a lot of at Tallgrass?
Well, we don't see a lot of it at Tallgrass, Bill, mainly because the type of institution we are. Our program really doesn't come to the level that the medical professionals need, especially if they are in licensing trouble. Our program, of course, is a spiritually based program, and we are a non-clinical, non-medical program. We have had medical professionals go through our program, and a limited number, nowhere near the number that that Julie was just talking about. And we've been open about 7.5 years. We're just about to hit our 900th guest, and I think we've had like 4 to 5 medical professionals, and only one of those that came to us was under investigation for licensing violations and such as that. So,
and it wasn't a nurse. You said
no. It was not a nurse. It was a pharmacy technician, and that's you know. So, do we see that number? No, we don't. But that's probably due more to our program than the actual people who need the help in the profession, because as Julie said, what we see, the profession is really very insignificant, because we see it from every socioeconomic level. We see it from, you know, professionals, from school superintendents to truck drivers to laborers, and it kind of hangs in that 9 to 10% range there. And of course, we only treat a small portion of those who seek treatment, because there's other facilities in Sioux Falls, in and around the Sioux Falls area, that do a marvelous job of helping people at a higher level of care than we really give. The ones who have co-occurring disorders need psychiatric care, need medical care. We don't provide that. So our numbers don't quite reflect reality.
Dennis Ford is with Tallgrass, and Julie Schoolmeister, Face It Together, Sioux Falls. Gloria Damgaard has joined us this morning. We're very happy to have her as the executive director of the South Dakota Board of Nursing. We've kind of let them kind of set the stage a little bit. We've told about the past, but you have some new numbers you wanted to share with us this morning. Mm-hmm. That, again, the concern is that the 1% might be a little low. The real percentage may be 10%. You have some numbers that Don Jorgensen, when he did his story a few months ago, didn't have. Do you want to bring us up to date?
Well, sure. And, you know, I just want to, first of all, start out that to let the public know that we do believe that nursing, the profession of nursing, is not any different than the general public. And we believe that about 10%, you know, of the nursing profession could have problems with drugs or alcohol. And we also know that this is a chronic progressive disease, and not everyone is at the same stage of the disease. So when the Board of Nursing sees nurses with problems with the chemical dependency or substance use disorder, they're usually at a later stage in the disease. And many times they have diverted drugs or stolen drugs from the workplace. And I just want the public to know that that's the extreme case. And generally with nurses, these problems don't show up in the workplace until a very late stage of the disease. So in looking through our disciplinary actions for 2013, our board took 35 final actions, and of that 35, 12 of those nurses were voluntarily surrendered their licenses due to substance use disorders, and many of those were cases of diversion. In 2012, that rate was a little bit higher. We had 44 final actions taken, and 25 of those were nurses disciplined for substance use disorder, and many of them for diversion. Because when they have reached the point where they're diverting drugs from the workplace, generally what happens is they do lose their license for a period of time. In 2011, we had 29 final actions, and 14 of those were due to a substance use disorder, many related to diversion, so that's almost half of the cases that we were doing. So a third in 2013, 57% in 2012, and in 2011, about 50% of all of our cases have to do with substance use disorder.
Gloria Damgaard, Executive Director of the South Dakota Board of Nursing. The other point that was made in the earlier stories, there's no mandatory reporting in South Dakota like there is in other states, meaning hospitals don't have to report a nurse who is suspected of abusing drugs. Should we be concerned?
You know, that's an issue that we have looked at in the past, is if we should try to move forward with mandatory reporting. And, you know, we didn't get a lot of support for it initially, but I think it is concerning, not only from the point of substance use disorders, but also of other practice violations, so that, nurses can't be terminated from jobs and then go to the next place and repeat the same behavior. I do believe that when it comes to diversion, that the healthcare facilities in our state are very good about reporting those to us. But as I mentioned earlier, that's a very egregious act. It happens very late in the progression of the disease.
A lot of businesses have routine drug testing. That's not required.
Not that I know of in healthcare.
And again, we're not pointing the finger at you. We're just making the case as to what the circumstances are in South Dakota. Dennis and Julie, when you hear what we've just heard Gloria say, and she's very much concerned with the care and the safety, that is utmost to all of us that do this show. When we talk about addiction and recovery, we feel the same way. Is it your thought that maybe the hospital should report? Should there be drug testing?
Well, excuse me. When we look at the overall climate we live in today, we drug test everything from truck drivers to security guards. We have federal DOT, for instance, requires that even mechanics who work on trucks must be drug tested periodically. Because they are in safety-sensitive positions, and they are, if they are under the influence, they're a threat to society. We all can see an 80,000-pound truck runs over somebody. It's a disaster. So should the medical profession be held to the same standard that we kind of put in the workplace? I kind of think so. I can't say I've done any study on it or research, but, in the facility that I run, everybody's drug tested, myself included.
Julie Schoolmeister with Face It Together, the same question. Should there be the reporting? Should there be routine drug testing of nursing and those in the medical profession?
Well, I guess, Bill, what I would like to see happen more so than that is that healthcare and, you know, businesses in general follow the lead of some of the businesses that we've worked with in the employer initiative and trying to create a culture of recovery where people don't feel stigmatized by having the disease of addiction. As Gloria spoke about the disease being chronic and progressive in nature, when we've done this acute care model where we wait till everything, it's hit the fan, so to speak, we wait till it's too late, the wheels are coming off the bus, and then everybody's going, well, maybe we should have done something. If we can get the intervention in place earlier, if we can create that culture of recovery so that people don't feel stigmatized by having the disease of addiction, especially when you're someone in that sort of double whammy situation where you're supposed to be healthful and taking care of people, there's a whole other expectation there. I guess I would wonder if, does that start all the way back in nursing school? Is addiction addressed in the curriculum there? What are the expectations when people are even being trained as to, how is addiction viewed and how is it addressed? I guess, Gloria, do you know?
Yes, I can answer that.
Sure.
Because we do address it in nursing school, and my background actually is nursing education, so I've actually taught in that area before. But, so we teach it in the curriculum, and we also, with our Health Professionals Assistance Program, allow students who are struggling with a chemical dependency issues to be in our program as well so that they can stay in their programs and be monitored and recover. And, it's our hope if we catch the professionals, and I don't like the word catch, but if we identify these mm-hmm. individuals early and get them into the program and get them into a healthy recovery, we won't be dealing with them when they get their licenses,
right.
And they'll be safe to practice. But yes, we do address it. But I think it's one of those things where, it can't happen to me, and, it just doesn't have the meaning unless you're one of the 10% that has the illness.
Okay.
When we come back, we're going to talk about the four greatest risk factors for nurses and nurses returning to practice, all a part of addiction recovery on this It's Your Business show. Interesting discussion this morning. It's a part of our addiction and recovery series, which we do the second and fourth Tuesdays each month in the 9 to 10 o'clock hour. We post a podcast of the show. It will be posted by Mark Brown probably by tomorrow morning at the earliest. And we do have past shows that you can go back and listen to. And we also have a blog up on the show today if you want to check that on It's Your Business. Our guest this morning, Gloria Damgaard, Executive Director of the South Dakota Board of Nursing, Dennis Ford, Executive Director at Tallgrass, and Julie Schoolmeister, Face It Together, Sioux Falls, all important to this discussion. And we talked this morning about a nurse who was on the air with us on January the 28th, talking about how she was tempted and finally lost her license, was almost relieved, and doesn't want to return to the nursing profession. Gloria, when you hear that kind of a story and the numbers that you told us about this morning from 2011 through 2013, do most of them want to return to nursing?
You know, I think that varies. Some of them do want to return to nursing, and if they do, it's a very rigorous process to return. The board generally mandates these nurses into our health professionals assistance program. That's a 5-year program. It consists of doing daily call-ins to find out if they've been selected for random drug testing. It sometimes they have to not be allowed to administer narcotics for a certain period of time, and then it's kind of difficult for them to find a job in nursing because that's something that nurses do all the time. They do counseling, they do support groups, and it's a very rigorous process, and I think that sometimes it's hard for individuals to do that. And I think others just, you know that the temptation is there, and the stress of the work that nurses do kind of, you know, keeps them from going back. And we have seen others that just prefer their drugs.
And again, the point that Carrie had made was that oftentimes they're shorthanded, they're overwhelmed. As nursing, that happens whether you're in a hospital or in a nursing home or any kind of health care. If you will, explain, who is the Board of Nursing and what do you do?
Well, the Board of Nursing is a state agency. We come under the direction of the Department of Health, so we're part of the executive branch of state government. The board itself is actually an 11-member board, and all of those board members are appointed by the governor. We have 6 RN members, 3 LPN members, and then 2 public members. And as a group, the board makes all the decisions on the disciplinary cases for the board. So we have a staff that does the investigations, that receives the complaints. The Board of Nursing actually is the body that takes the final actions. And additionally, we do all the licensing of nurses in the state. We do all of the approval of nursing education programs in the state, and we regulate nursing practice.
You, in your notes to me, said that you wanted to identify for us the 4 greatest risk factors mm-hmm. for nurses. Would you do that, please?
I will do that, and I think you've hit on a couple of those already. But the first one being access to the drugs, to the prescription drugs and the narcotics, because they're readily available where nurses work, in hospitals and other healthcare facilities. So it's almost an occupational hazard that these drugs are available. Secondly, we look at an attitude that we have as nurses that we call pharmacological optimism. So we work around those drugs. We know what they do for people. So what happens then with that attitude of optimism with the use of drugs is that sometimes nurses start self-diagnosing and self-medicating. And then those drugs are available. The other really big risk factor that you've identified is the stress of the occupation, the long hours, the understaffing, sometimes being overwhelmed, the acuity level of the patients that we're taking care of. Some of the research has shown that there is a relationship with shift rotations, shifts longer than 8 hours, being on duty on the weekends, and a risk factor for chemical dependency. And then a lack of education, I think, is the fourth big risk factor, and that just is a lack of recognition of the signs and symptoms of chemical dependency issues by, you know, all members of the professions. So those would be the top four.
When we come back, we're going to ask Dennis and Julie if what we've just heard with those factors also are common in society, those kind of things, if it's common, if it's kind of hitting the same kind of effect that it has with the rest of us who are not in the nursing profession. We'll do that, and we'll also talk about nurses returning to practice when our addiction recovery show continues. Addiction and recovery, our topic this morning. And again, this will be on podcast if you want to refer some other people to it. If you know some people that you think maybe need some attention or need to think about it, that's the reason we do what we do. Our guests this morning, our experts, Julie Schoolmeister, Face It Together Sioux Falls, along with Dennis Ford, Executive Director at Tallgrass, and Gloria Damgaard, Executive Director of the South Dakota Board of Nursing. Gloria, the Health Professional Assistance Program is something you circled that we needed to talk about.
Right. The Health Professionals Assistance Program in South Dakota is a multidisciplinary program. It's for physicians, nurses, pharmacists, and dentists. And what it is a monitoring program. And so when the boards of nursing have individuals with chemical dependency issues and we refer them or mandate them into this program, it means that they have an opportunity to work while they're in recovery and be monitored closely so that they can return to practice. So it's not a treatment program, it's a monitoring program.
Nurses returning to practice, not all want to do that, and it's difficult, as you said, for them to do that, kind of feeling like they've been marked.
Yes. You know, I think we try really hard to reduce the stigma that's attached with the discipline that these nurses get. You know, I think we try really hard to let them know that it's possible to keep their license or to get it back if they've had to voluntarily surrender it. You know, we don't call them addicts. We use terminology like the substance use disorder that's, you know, less stigmatized. And you have to remember that nursing is one of the most trusted professions in this country. And so when a nurse has problems with substance use disorder and they're disciplined, it is, you know, there's a real high stigma attached to that just because they're held to a higher standard than the rest of the population. So we try really hard to reduce that stigma through with this program.
Gloria Damgaard, Executive Director of the South Dakota Board of Nursing, one of the things she did identify as their utmost concern is the care and safety of the patients and those that are involved. Dennis, Carrie is now at Tallgrass. She serves as a cook. I presume from what we've seen with her, with Joan and her on the show with Julie the last go-around about a month ago, she is recovering, but still she knows she doesn't want to return to nursing, and that is something that not everybody should do if they feel that the risk is right in front of them.
Well, yes, Carrie is employed with Tallgrass. She's a little more than a cook. She's our kitchen manager and manages a fairly extensive kitchen budget. And she's a professional in what she does. Her choice to not return to nursing, I think, could be temporary as she builds her own recovery. I don't know that. It's like many people in recovery. We have to make choices on a daily basis as to how we're going to live our life and best maintain our recovery. And the other thing is that I really want to point out is that recovery is possible. It does not matter what your profession is. You can recover and can become a part of society again. It takes time. You deal with stigmatism in whatever profession you're in. Is it worse than some? Absolutely. Absolutely. There's, you know, nurses especially. The most trusted people we know are nurses, and the fact that recovery is possible is the big thing. The stigmatism, or the stigma that Julie and her organization work so hard to get rid of, and we do too, is this is a disease we're treating, okay? This disease has many ways to be treated, and we are having success with it. Is everybody getting well? No. But not everybody gets over cancer either. So we're doing, I think, we're all in the same business, you know, trying to make our life better and make our society better. And the people who have suffered from addiction and alcoholism have a place at the table. And
Julie Schoolmeister with Face It Together Sioux Falls. You and I talked before the show a little bit that you'd had another one of your business meetings, that the businesses had come together. What we're talking about today is not just isolated to nursing, to pharmacy, to anything that's medical. Other businesses have some of the same concerns.
Right, definitely. You know, like Dennis said, it reaches across all professions. In our employer initiative, we have anything from healthcare to manufacturing, media. I mean, it really runs the gamut. It's all about finding businesses that want to create the culture of recovery and that want their employees to know that they're valued and that regardless of any disease they may be suffering from, that as an employer, they care about the employee and they want them well and they want them there. I feel so fortunate to work in a community where now we have 28 different businesses that are involved. So, I mean, if you think about that, it's pretty huge that there's, you know, 28 CEOs and executives within this community that are saying, we value our employees and we value their wellness, and we're going to treat addiction just like any other disease. And, you know, we're going to tackle it head on. We're going to talk about it. And we're going to invite Face It Together in and refer people to Face It Together and help people start their journey to recovery. Cause like Dennis said, it's totally possible.
In, this show, which will be a year old in April, we have had a lot of people come forward and talk about their addictions, Gloria. We've had a lot of businesses that have been a part of the show talking about their people wanting to provide the help, whether it be tied with Tallgrass and or Face It Together. You're the first one we've had from a state agency that has come forward to talk openly, to answer the concerns today. And I think you did it in the fact that you are concerned about the education, the care, and the safety, and that 1% probably doesn't hit all the people, nor would it hit all the people in businesses that admit to it. But what we want to do with a show is, if you are one of those people that are addicted in some way in any business, whether it be pharmacy, nursing, manufacturing, or anything else, that there is help out there.
Exactly. And, you know, you can, any of the healthcare professionals could call the Health Professionals Assistance Program. They can get into that program voluntarily and get the help that they need. The number for that program is 605-322-4048. And I just want to make one more point is that, you know, we care so much about these health professionals that our boards, our multidisciplinary boards, are willing to pay for this program. And we do that strictly on the licensing fees that we collect because we don't get any money from the state to operate. We operate solely on licensing fees. So you have four boards that are now paying for this program for our professionals because we care about them, want them to recover, and first and foremost, want the public to be safe.
Julie, let's get some contact information. You wanted to mention one other number as well.
Actually, and you know what, Gloria just mentioned the HPAP number.
Let's give it a second time.
Sure. 605-322-4048 for the Health Professional Assistance Program. Or if you, you know, are employed in any type of business, you can call Face It Together, 605-274-2262, or reach us on the web at faceitsiouxfalls.org.
And you would also say if there is a business out there, you have 28. If you, I'm sure that you would take more than 28. You go to 29 or 30.
Let's bring everybody in. Definitely. I would say call us again, 605-274-2262. I'd love to visit with you about the opportunity to join the employer initiative.
Dennis Ford is an executive director, the executive director with Tallgrass. Have we covered an important topic today, Dennis?
I think we have. I think we've covered a very important topic. And, of course, Tallgrass is, we think we're the troops in the trenches. But we know we need the help of everybody. This thing is a community problem. It takes a community to solve it. The only way we're going to solve it, which I don't see that in the near future, but at least we're addressing it here in the city of Sioux Falls. I think we're very fortunate with the employers, with Gloria coming on and being willing to talk about from an official viewpoint. At Tallgrass, of course, if you're in crisis, call us. We're at 605-368-5559. And if we're not the agency to help you, we will find the one that is to help you. So,
18,000 or so nurses, is that still an accurate number?
Yep, that's an accurate number.
If there is somebody out there that needs help, is there a number they can call for the Nursing Association?
They can call the Board of Nursing at 362-2760. And they can call in and not fear that that's a report to us. We can guide and direct them to the help that they need to recover. We would welcome that.
Gloria Damgaard, Executive Director of the South Dakota Board of Nursing, would you come back with us at some other time?
Absolutely.
I would be very excited to have her back. Dennis Ford, Executive Director of Tallgrass, and Julie Schoolmeister, Face It Together Sioux Falls Executive Director as well. We appreciate the discussion, and we'll be back in another couple of weeks, and we'll talk again. When we come back, you'll meet a member of the It's Your Business family concerned a little bit about your insurance and your travels. Partner of It's Your Business the last couple of years, and we know what they do in T, Hartford, Humboldt, Watertown, and where else?
I see you have blanks on there. Let's go Hayti, Esteline, and they have another. They actually have two offices in Watertown.
All right. You've identified all. That was a sneaky way to get all of them mentioned, but even the president of the company has had to mention all eight on the show. Rely Bank is a community bank, and you provide a big help from that side with people that have insurance needs.
We do. We try to be a full-service thing because so many times your banking and financial needs are tied into insurance ramifications, and a lot of times it's easier to get all that discussed in one or two visits, and you only have to go into one office to get it done.
Makes a difference.
We'd like to think so.
All right. We're going to talk about three or four points today. One of those is life insurance on students with education loans.
One of the reasons, this is a good time to talk about something like this, is parents of high school seniors and those who are just starting college again, possibly next fall, they're filling out their FAFSA forms and other student aid applications and things like that. A lot of parents will find themselves in a situation where they may have to co-sign on a student loan. Could be whether it's private or government or whatever. A lot of parents are faced with that situation. And not wanting to sound dire or morbid or anything, students sometimes do die. And parents are co-signed on those student loans. The student is dead. The parent is still expected to repay that student loan. So it might not be a bad idea for parents to consider looking at a 10 or 20-year term policy, and they can get that for $10 or $20 a month or something like that, just to protect themselves for that loan. Sad to say, student loans are part of life now, and some of the students do accumulate a lot of student debt before they get done, and if their parents are on those loans, inexpensive life insurance policy is not a bad idea.
College students with vehicles who live off campus, there have to be some insurance considerations there, too.
Yeah, the biggest problem you run into there is students that live off campus, a lot of times they'll get two or three roommates together and they'll get an apartment or they'll rent a house or something like that, and then all the cars are parked in the driveway. And the way a car insurance policy is written, the line gets a little blurred sometimes because it talks about members of the household. And that does get blurred with, okay, let's define the household. The best advice I can give any parents who have students away at school with a car is to make sure that they just drive their car and don't drive their roommates' cars and vice versa. They could find themselves as a defendant in a lawsuit when one of the roommates gets into a very serious accident. Most of the time, students don't know what the status of the other student's insurance. Nobody knows. And it's best just to drive your car and don't borrow someone else's car. One of the other things that people think about is, well, my roommate had permission to drive the car. If they actually took out their car insurance policy and read it, the word permission never is there. It actually says it's a covered, that person would be a covered driver if they have a reasonable belief that they're entitled to do so. Well, that gets kind of gray area sometimes when the order or carry out pizza and you take the last car in the driveway and it's not yours. Best just to take your own car.
Jim Kennedy is with ReliaBank. People wanting information, you talked about your 8 locations. There must be a way that they can reach you guys. You have a website, and I'm sure you have several phone numbers.
We've got several phone numbers. The closest one here in Sioux Falls is at the T office, and that's 498-3683. So,
you're going to take up a topic that kind of made me scratch my head a little bit, because we do a lot of talking on this show about condos and townhomes and the insurance part of it, things of which to be aware. Hadn't really thought of this.
Well, what happens is there is a standard insurance form. You know, you have a homeowner's policy, and insurance agents know that it usually comes in the form of a, what they call an HO3, which is what they call a special form, or an HO5, which is a comprehensive form, which once you decide to limit on your house, and then there's so much for other structures, there's so much for personal property, there's so much for loss of use. If you purchase a condominium, you have what you call a unit owner's policy. Insurance agents know it as an HO6. And the standard policy comes with, depending on the company, it may have $6,000 coverage on your, on the building, which sounds low, but what are you required to insure? Some policies have 10. If you own or purchase a condominium, you really need to read the bylaws, because those are different in... There's as many differences in those insurance requirements from association as there are associations. Some bylaws require you to insure just the wall coverings. And so you don't need a lot of coverage for what they would consider building coverage. You're responsible for the paint or the wallpaper or maybe the floor coverings or whatever. And you can figure the square footage on your condo and figure that out. Some associations say studs in, which means you're responsible for drywall, all the flooring, and sometimes that means you're also responsible for bathtubs, toilets, and sinks.
So the HOA would be pretty important.
You really need to read the HOA association rules and the bylaws to find out what exactly your requirements are. If you do have a serious fire, you want to make sure that at least your unit is restored. The association will cover the outside structure itself. So be aware of what's in those bylaws and what the association rules are.
Lots of vacations going on. People always have questions. We've arrived at an airport, renting cars. What's your advice?
Get that question every summer. It's coming up, and we're getting it a lot now. If you have, there are companies out there that do have an endorsement available, some apply it automatically, that if you rent a car while you're on vacation, not for business purposes, but on vacation, they will pay for the extra expenses that may occur in case you get into an accident with that car. Again, with rental agencies, if there's 20 different rental agencies, there's 20 different agreements, and they all say different things. Some of them will even say, when you sign your name on our agreement, you authorize us to charge up to $3,000 or $5,000 or whatever, the amount will vary, on your credit card for any damage we discover on your car. The way to get around that is to purchase a collision damage waiver. And that way, you know, you turn in the key or whatever. What your car insurance policy will pay for is a comprehensive or a collision loss. It will not pay for the rental agency's loss of income on that car if it sits in the shop for 2 weeks. It won't pay for what they call diminution of value. It just doesn't pay for that. So you could end up with some big out-of-pocket expenses unless you're careful. Some companies do offer an endorsement to pay for those expenses, so you really need to check with your agent. We have two companies that offer that endorsement, and it does relieve you of some expenses while you're on vacation, because you don't have to pay that $15, $20 a day collision damage waiver.
There you go. Jim Kennedy from ReliaBank. How they reach you?
498-3683 or ReliaBank.com.
We appreciate you taking time to be with us today. Drive carefully going back. I presume you're insured.
Yes, I paid my premiums.
All right. You think, Bill?
I think. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Bill.
Russ Hubendick, directionalmotivation.com, clientstaffingsolutions.com. Good morning. I thought of you when I saw a story about the military and jobs this morning.
I read that same story along with a couple others as well. And, you know, the downsizing that's taking place within the military is certainly creating some interesting issues for veterans.
And, of course, the talk in Washington right now is that it's going to get even tighter as far as the military is concerned. Your service is right there, and you have been sharing with us some interviews with people that you've gotten jobs, including the one you had on Friday.
Yeah, we had him on there, and we were able to go ahead and get an offer put together, and he accepted, and he'll be starting in the middle of March. But we have been contacted from that interview. We've had several veterans reach out and give us a call as well, and so they're in process right now in the interviewing stage.
Well, and many of the people that are calling you are not necessarily in this part of the world. They're in other parts of the world, which makes it very important for us to say, you're in the military. Why not take advantage of this resource that people around the country are looking to for what he has written about deployment to employment, how to interview, works with Fortune 500 companies. That's a no-brainer, Russ.
Yeah, well, it really is. And, you know, some of the individuals that listened to the broadcast on Friday were actually in Fort Knox, Kentucky. And so a couple other different bases as well. And so it's interesting to see the exposure that we're getting.
Well, and the other thing that we would mention to our businesses out there, just imagine having your name on a book that could be about Sioux Falls, any place in the country. That's something that I know you're still looking for, are some people to put their names on the deployment to employment.
Yeah. In fact, we just talked to a company, that was on Friday as well, and they have an interest in putting their advertising, saying compliments of their business, and put it right in the front of the book. And so there's easy access for the veterans to see their company and their support of the veteran community.
Russ, how do people reach you?
My phone number here is 605-362-8176, extension 101. They can also go to our websites, which is clientstaffingsolutions.com, and then also to our free career resource site, which is directionalmotivation.com.
Russ, thanks. We're out of time. Tomorrow, our 600th show.
Whoa,
thanks for joining us.
Big party, Bill, tomorrow.
Our time's up. Thank you for yours.